Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
If you want interesting and entertaining debate on the Premier League and other English leagues, but from a show that doesn't take itself too seriously, then check out The Whistleblowers. It's a weekly football podcast hosted by me. I used to play football, Martin Gritton, stand-up Mark Smith when he can, and music manager Gareth Dobson, who always has plenty of good chat, being a Spurs fan. We basically get football writers in to have a chat as well, and we talk about the stories that matter in English football, whether it's on the pitch or off it. It's free to listen to iTunes, Acast, Spotify, and wherever else you get your podcasts. Or you can download the Whistleblowers app. Follow us on Twitter at Football Podcast. Cheers.
Hello and welcome to Footballistically Arsenal. I am Boyd Hilton. He is Sidekick Josh. Hello, Josh. In your cupboard,
Boyd, how are you
today? Good. Yeah, just like a wardrobe. You're in a wardrobe, like a walk-in wardrobe. You've got your garments on one side. Is that where we find you?
What's happened here is we're painting our bedroom. So a load of clothes have had to move into this room. Hence, there is a rail. We could go through the rail, see if there's anything you want to pick out. Just not talk about Arsenal for 40 minutes you want, Boyd. I'm happy to do that.
You've already unveiled, spoiled my joke, which was to try and carry on as long as possible without talking about Arsenal. So I was going to ask our guest, Benji Peters. Hi, Benji.
Hi, Boyd. Hi, Josh.
Benji is resplendent in his, looks like his lavish home on a sofa, on a brown suede, is it?
No, I think it's more fabric. Not it's not okay. Suede. No.
Okay. Fabric. Welcome, Benji. Corduroy. When's the last time you were on the pod?
I think it must have been Unai Emery.
Wow.
Era. Yeah.
So over like a year. Midnightmare or early nightmare, late nightmare?
I think it was midnightmare. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. Yes. To try and avoid talking, well, there are some positive things that have happened recently. For one, don't look like that, Josh. Josh is looking askance at the idea. For one, I predicted the correct result of the Arsenal Mulder game on Thursday. 4-1.
Yeah.
What a bold. I think
Well, it's not that bold, is it? We were expected to win by a couple of goals against Molde, and I don't think we can talk about the Molde game for any more than about another 30 seconds. But, boys, you should just describe your background, because you've given a very clear depiction of what Benji's setup and my setup is today. You are in the same position every single week without fail. You never give us a tour of what else is going on around you.
Yeah, I mean, the listeners can't see it, so it's slightly... But, I'm in my kind of office study area, where I've got my records behind me. Some people have books.
I've
got
Wenger
book.
Yes, the Wenger book. Yes. It looks in pristine condition that you've taken great care over reading each page.
Yeah. Benji, have you read the Wenger book?
I'm two-thirds of the way through it. Sorry, go on.
Have you been two-thirds of the way through for about a month?
No, but it has been a slow burn.
Yeah, slow burn. That's a great euphemism. Fair enough. And the other good thing that's happened is we do have a new president elect of the United States of America, and I consider that to be a massive step forward for civilization, Josh. That's, you know, we've got to celebrate these things. There's a wider world out there apart from football.
Of those two, were you more excited to be getting the 4-1 prediction right, or about Biden being the new president?
I was very excited about the 4-1 prediction because that's the first prediction I've got right from like years probably, and it justified the quaint tradition we have of guessing the result at the end of every podcast. No, I was more excited about Trump. Yeah, I've been literally waiting 4 years for that, so that was very important to me. We do have quite a few. Every time I mention Trump on this podcast, I do get slagged off by we've got a weird subsect of Arsenal supporting quite right wing people in America and around who listen to this podcast. I don't know if you knew that. So that there's about three or four of them every time. So I guarantee you, after this podcast, when this podcast goes out, they'll all be lambasting me for being a lefty liberal socialist idiot, and they'll be complaining that the election was stolen.
Are they also upset about Ozil being left out?
Oh yeah, I think maybe there's an Ozil crossover. Samaritan. Yeah, you might be right. Anyway, we can't put it off any longer. We have to talk about the game yesterday, Benji. First of all, I mean, a week is a long time in football, isn't it? Because a week ago, when we had the United game to celebrate, that was a historic victory of being one of the top, you know, one of the big six, not the top six, big six teams away, which we haven't done for years. And then now, so I feel like we do have to at least maintain some level of calm, because as disappointing, crushingly disappointing as the performance was yesterday and the result, it is only a week ago where we all felt really positive about that achievement against United. So, Ben, what's your feeling? Do you think this result yesterday was calamitous and, you know, a real measure of just how we haven't come that far under Arteta? What's your general feeling about that?
I think yesterday was pretty calamitous. In isolation, as a football match, it was awful from start to finish. We were lucky that first goal was ruled off for their striker being in an offside position. It was painful to watch, and it reminded me of the dark days of Unai Emery. But I think you're right, Boyd. Perspective and calm is needed. And, you know, when we look at Arteta, it was really encouraging reading this morning on the website that he's looking at himself. It was reassuring that he said last night wasn't good enough and it's down to him. So he's learning as well. And all these experiences are very new to him. So I think, his first objective was to make us more stable. And he's done that, last night aside. The challenge now is to make us more potent, which is, I think, a harder challenge to do in footballing terms. And he and Arsenal are clearly struggling with that at the moment.
Yeah, because he selected the same team that beat United, didn't he? The same team and formation, effectively. What did you think of that decision? Because I'm slightly in 2 minds about it. I think, you know, when you see, first of all, you know, you don't change a winning team, etc. That cliche comes to mind. And, you know, I like the idea that he's settled upon his best team in theory. You know, I don't agree that it is, that those particular players. But you can't blame him, or can you, for picking the same team? Or would you say that, in fact, certain players, like I'm going to single out, you know, Willian, for example, who didn't play that well, even against Mole, I don't think, retain their place week after week in the Premier League. And Lacazette, you know, a lot of people are very angry with Lacazette at the moment with his performance. Or is it understandable that he stuck with that formation and that exact team?
I think Josh will know this because we were on the same WhatsApp group. We were having this debate a bit last night. And there's a middle ground, I think, with personnel and management. And I think that 10 weeks ago, we were looking at the transfer window and all saying we're really pleased with the business that he's done. You know, renewing Aubameyang's contract, Saka signing up, a proven Premier League midfielder coming in. Maybe the contract was too long, but everybody was excited that Willian was joining us. We were happy with the squad. So I don't like sitting here 2 and a bit months or month, however long later, saying, oh, we need a load of new players. Having said that, you definitely need quality to win football matches. So I think it's a middle ground there. That did he pick the right team? I don't know. I find it harsh. You know, Lacazette has missed big chances against Liverpool, Leicester, and yesterday at key moments of games. You know, clearly he is not the player that he was probably 18 months ago. He was never prolific, but he was far more deadly than he is now. Clearly, Willian hasn't produced the exciting form that Chelsea fans were all shouting about. They were disappointed that he left. Clearly, Pepe has been anything but an exciting winger since he's joined the club. So there are points.
Occasionally, it's exciting, isn't he? Every now and then.
Occasionally, yeah. But
he's scored a great goal against Mould.
Yeah, but I don't think anybody's looking at that as a signing and going, that's brilliant. You know, we've got, but then I think that it's also these players. It's down to the manager to some degree to get us playing with a certain style. But I also think that back to the very first point we made, patience. You know, it took Klopp,
yeah,
probably a good few years to get his team playing in his vision. I think we all trust Arteta. He's definitely bought himself some goodwill. It's been 12 months and I think there has been progress. So I think that there's a balance here. And I think that we like extremes as a society. You know, if we beat Man United, we're the best thing ever. And if we lose to Villa, we're awful. And I think there's a middle ground there. You know, we finished 8th last season. We're currently 11th. So we're clearly not that great. However, we're only 4 points off the top four, which is our target. And if you look at Spurs, who are clearly a rival, or Man United, Spurs have scraped their last few games against Burnley, Brighton, and yesterday, they scraped the late victory.
Someone so, not great. Yeah, they've had a very easy start to the season, haven't they? Spurs on paper.
I'm for calm, reflective. He needs to fix this, but also I think he knows that, and I'm pleased that he knows that. And he said something, you know, yesterday, which was refreshing. It's on me, and I'm gonna. This isn't good enough. Yeah. And I think we cried for those days under Wenger and Emery towards the end there, which was take some bloody responsibility. This isn't very good, and it's not good enough for Arsenal. And I like that. So he knows it, and he's learning.
His patience. Josh is. Ben just right. He says the right things, doesn't he? Always, pretty much every. You know, I mean, I thought his post match interview was really good, and you know. As Benji says, taking responsibility, and he's going to look himself in the mirror, I think he said. But the real proof, isn't it, is going to be he's got the interlull, hasn't he, to kind of really think about what he's doing. And for me, there is one possible massive positive element about that calamitous defeat, which is that I think you could say, I think we've all said that creatively and going forward we've been problematic. We haven't been great. And we're really terrible yesterday. Like, the defence was one thing, but I felt like it really exposed. You watch Villa, the way Villa played, you know, sweeping movements with their front four, pretty much attacking en masse regularly, right from that first goal, that disallowed goal, right from the first minute, which I think really put the wind up us and kind of, and almost had a calamitous effect on the whole mental aspect of the game. But watching, that's how a lot of teams play now. You know, the Liverpools and the Villas, and even obviously Leeds have had some bad results, but there's a general free-flowing attacking football happening in the league, which is why there's so many goals are being scored, except Arsenal. It's almost like, and until yesterday, that was kind of all right because defensively we had the best defence until yesterday. And, you know, we had this solid shape. And we were really complimenting the fact that Arteta had finally solidified our historically terrible defence, all of that. But I think what yesterday really exposed, didn't it, is that you can't carry on like this, because for me, it's going to get if we can't score goals, that we haven't scored any goals from open play, and if Aubameyang's not getting any chances at all, which he didn't yesterday, that's a massive problem, isn't it?
Huge problem. I mean, I came away from watching the 90 minutes thinking that is as bad a performance as I've seen in a very long time. The feeling felt a little bit similar to Olympiacos when we went out of Europe in February. But we weren't totally outclassed that night. We weren't embarrassed. We just let in a very late goal and bowed out of Europe to a team that we should go and beat. In terms of seeing a team who we should be, to all extents and purposes, comfortably beating, come and outplay us like that, I actually don't know when I've had a feeling so similar to that in recent years. It was just total domination. And just watching the highlights back, as I did this morning, I brought myself to do it. I mean, 5-0 wouldn't have flattered them. You know, Leno made a couple of very good saves. Obviously, the offside goal, we were very fortunate at the beginning. And, you know, Benji mentioned there about Lacazette missing big chances. And it felt like there was one opportunity yesterday to turn that game when Lacazette had a header. And just at the moment, it's not clicking for him. And if it's not clicking when Arteta's default team, or what appears to be his default team, is going out on the pitch, the options now are our £72 million player, who Benji just said isn't quite living up to it despite being able to score in the Europa League, and Eddie Nketiah. And that doesn't inspire you, does it? Didn't, like when Nketiah and Pepe came on yesterday, didn't they ask, is definitely going to turn the game? Admittedly, I don't know what else I'd have done. That's what we had on the bench, and that's a worry.
Well, there is a point there, isn't there? Why wasn't Willock, who had a great game against Mulder, on the bench? Yep. You know, I felt like we had a lot of, you know, Xhaka, Ceballos, we had a lot of central midfielders on the bench. But nothing apart. And I don't think, I almost feel with Nketiah, I don't ever feel when he, I think, you know, fair enough to give him a go, but I don't ever feel, oh, he's definitely going to affect things. Whereas I think maybe Willock, who, you know, after that performance against Mulder, deserved to come on as a sub. And, but Benji might, Josh mentions Lacazette. That Lacazette chance was the chance, wasn't it? We've been waiting for a good final delivery for the whole game, and Tierney delivered the perfect ball to him. He could not, it was literally there on a pinhead. It could not be more accurate or perfect. And he had the time to see it coming over, and he still, I've been defending Lacazette solidly for years. Like, you know, I always remind people he was our player of the season before last. I think he, you know, only last week people were hailing his job against United, how he worked so hard. And he did. But yesterday exposed, he's still a forward, isn't he? It's still his job to take chances if they're going to come to him. And that was awful. But even more than that, I feel he doesn't look right. Like, his attitude, I feel like he just looks kind of angry and frustrated, even within the first, second minute of the game.
Yeah.
What's your feeling about that?
It's a shame, because I think when he scored in the first game against Fulham, I thought to myself, okay, fine, you know, get him some momentum. And that was encouraging. I think he may have even scored in the second game as well.
But
a few things. First of all, I forgot that Tottenham played West Brom yesterday. That was the team that they played from before. A couple of encouraging points, just on a tangent, that Kieran Tierney looks absolutely fantastic as a signing. He's now been here, you know, 18 months or so, and he delivers those balls a lot. I know Saka wasn't his best game last night, but he's evolved. I think having Martinelli back will be a huge boost for us.
Very much looking forward to Martinelli coming back. Yeah,
he's a live wire. He's exciting. Yeah. He's pacey. I think that'll be a really good point. I think Gabriel and Partey, you know, let's not forget, these are two signings who have been with us combined about 2 months. Both look proper players. So I think that there's reason for optimism. And I think that... football's funny, because if, you know, he's got 2 weeks to think about it now, and he said, you know, it was interesting, as I wish we could play tomorrow morning so I could put this right. Part of me actually thinks, no, I want it to sit with him so he can actually think about this for 2 weeks and figure out how we're going to get this going again, because he's got Leeds away next, and then we've got some what I call winnable games. But football can change, right? So, you know, it's not beyond all possibility that Aubameyang starts playing up front. He introduces some different personnel, and we go and beat a team 2-0. Momentum comes back, and it's a different team. And, you know, teams around us drop points. The frustrating thing for me at the moment, apologies if I've deflected from the question a little bit, but every game seems like such a strategic battle and is so energy sapping to win.
Yeah.
You know, every goal is so hard to score. And, and like you said, if you miss one chance, you're like, shit, when's the next one going to come along? And it seems like football's becoming really difficult, and it's becoming like, I don't know if Arteta's holding their hand through the periods of play. It lacks fluidity. It lacks cohesion. Definitely going forward. Going back, it seems like we've got it. You know, I know put last night to one side, but it does look like we're a much more stable side.
You're so right. I think it's absolutely key. I mentioned this last week, and I'm going to bang on about it again, but I feel like, I mean, I can see why he's done it, you know, why he's set us up to have these very meticulous attacking moves that rely on, you know, kind of one touch and some accurate, very accurate passing and interplay and blah, blah, blah. But what you don't see from, which is fine, but all the opposition can see these attacks a mile away, can't they? I think, you know, and they can see Alba out wide, you know, and what he's going to try and do. And I think, you know, it's kind of becoming easier and easier for the opposition to counter that. And even worse, there doesn't feel any opportunity. It doesn't feel like our forwards as a group attack as a group.
Hope like he doesn't become stubborn. Yesterday,
he was like,
stubborn with Aubameyang on the flank. Like,
please.
That worked Surely. Really well last year. But if he doesn't score, he's not a creative player. He doesn't assist. He doesn't pop loads of balls into the box. Unless I'm missing something, I feel that one of the best strikers in Europe is being really wasted out on the flank.
Of course.
And it feels like, surely there are other ways of getting him into goal scoring chances, you know. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think that crying out for him to be played up for a few weeks now.
And again, I've defended the Aubameyang out wide situation, you know, because I think, you know, you could see why, and various games it worked really well. You know, he was scoring at one point a lot of goals, wasn't he, until he signed that new contract. He was scoring some decent goals from out wide, you know, cutting in, you know, in classic style. But he's just, the fact that he's not getting any chances at all now is awful. It must be, and that must be really soul destroying for him. I just think he's got to start, isn't he, Arteta, with, he's got to put him central. And if it means, I don't know, it could be a 4-2-3-1, it could be a 4-3-3, whatever. He could do a 4-2-3-1. I think Pepe has to start instead of Willian. I'm going to move on to Willian in a minute. And I know there are issues with Pepe, but I'm sorry, a million years, I'd pick Pepe over Willian right now. And then, you know, just a more fluid front line, I feel like, is needed at the moment. What were you going to say, Josh?
No, I mean, the only defence, I think, for not putting Aubameyang up front is if you've got Lacazette in form. And you can go a couple of games and try it, but I think we now have to accept that it hasn't worked sufficiently, that you can still justify putting our club captain, our best player, out on the left-hand side. So he has to go. And I'm probably with you that there is some variant that could happen. I'm not sure it is necessarily Pepe. Maybe it's Saka being put forward into the... possibly the left-hand side of a front three, and maybe Willian still takes his place in the team, although obviously the Pepe at the moment, it's difficult to make a case for either of them in a way. I also wonder if David Luiz will make a return to this team, because at least on the nights where we're finding it difficult and struggling to break through, the one thing David Luiz does give you is the possibility of a long 40, 50-yard ball that does break down the opposition. And we didn't have that. I felt a lot of it last night, short balls in. Elneny, who didn't have his best night, was getting dispossessed. Obviously, Partey went off at half-time. It didn't help. But... I think there will be changes, and I don't know. It's not impossible, is it? We see a return to three centre-backs again, which obviously he has had at points. I just wonder, after a little period of struggling to score goals, whether he comes back in 2 weeks' time and changes it. And that game at Leeds is, you know, so intriguing. They started so well, you know, such hype about it, and yet they've been, you know, leaking goals, you know, horrendously, really. So you'd hope that we can go there and change our fortunes.
Yeah, absolutely. But he's good. It would be, I think, having said what he said last night, he's now slightly got himself in a, I mean, he had to say it, But he's, for me, like, if now in the Leeds game he doesn't put Aubameyang central, do you know what I mean? If he doesn't drop Lacazette, and I'd play with Saka and Pepe personally. I think they're both creative, good, you know, good players. I just wouldn't pick Willian. I think he's been an absolute disaster. Again, we'll get onto that again more in a minute. But Benji, do you know what I mean? If he, say he carries on, say he actually, and you wouldn't put it past him, because like all managers, he's got a stubborn streak, of course. And he has been sticking with this formation and roughly these players for weeks and weeks and weeks. So imagine, then people are going to be like, oh my God, he's actually not, you know, how much has he looked in the mirror and reflected?
I don't think people care, providing you win and get results, right? The Man United game, you know, was a great example. We were good. I wouldn't say we were great. We were good, putting a solid, stable performance against a team in indifferent form, and we scored a penalty. Leicester, Man City were not terrible. If he hadn't got that Man United result, there would have been, you know, knives out a little bit for him. I think that... It's all about he says trust the process, but you'll lose trust in the process if he doesn't learn from the process. And, you know, it's November now, and I think, as I said, you know, no one's going crazy yet. But, yeah, if in January, February time, top four seems unrealistic and nothing exciting is happening in cups, then people will start to question. I'm going against what I'm saying by even raising that now. But to your point, Boyd, I think he will change things. I think he will change things, and I think he knows he has to. And I'm not against playing some of the kids. I think that if you don't perform, you know, there were some really poor performers out there last night. Play Joe Willock. Play Nketiah instead of Lacazette. Try it. You know,
yeah.
You've almost got nothing to lose.
I would definitely play Willock right now, or instead of Willian. I'd play my mum instead of Willian. I think this has been part of, you think about this pattern of buying over the hill players from Chelsea cast-offs. What the fuck is going on? This has been going on for years
now.
Can
I ask you a question? You just on Willian.
Yeah.
I'm sitting on the fence here because I'm not sure he's done anything. Well, he hasn't done anything great, but equally he hasn't done anything terrible. So what I mean by that is Aubameyang, for example, gets bought some time because, you know, without him we'd be fucked, right? So, but the guy hasn't scored in open play for a hell of a long time, right? Once this season or something like that, right? Willian is part of a problem going forward offensively, but that, I think, is a collective problem, not just a Willian problem.
Well, my counter to that is he gave the ball away 10 times in the first half last week. More times than, you know, Pepe's always slagged off for giving the ball away. Wait, more times than Pepe. His dead ball delivery was awful, shocking. His corners and his free kicks were terrible. Not yesterday, but, you know, in the last few games. He missed two pretty decent chances, massive wayward shots over the bar, way wide. And the thing that presumably they brought him in for, presumably, I mean, I am mystified by the whole, I mean, it is part of a pattern for me of these Chelsea cast-offs, aging Chelsea players arriving on a free and being paid a large amount of money, presumably to stay in London and, you know, have a lovely time. His work rate, was terrible yesterday as well. And I know, so I think the difference between Aubameyang, at least he's being starved, isn't he, of the ball and being played out of position out wide and all of that. What's Willian's excuse? Willian is being played where he played for Chelsea roughly. He's had loads of, you know, he's the most experienced player. Like I pointed out to Alan Alga, our friend, our long-time iconoclastic contributor to the podcast, because Alan always has a go at Pepe for being technically terrible. And I said, well, he's given the ball away more than Pepe. So does that make Willian technically terrible? And he's like, no, because he's won the league this much. I'm like, well, what exposes, isn't it? Why, if Pepe had missed that chance, had given the ball away, which Willian gave the ball away yesterday that led directly to their goal, then Pepe would have been like humiliated and dragged to hell on Twitter and social media.
I hear that.
And Willian's the Willian, sorry, just one more thing, is the experienced one. What is the point of having an experienced player if he doesn't do any of those things that you rely on experienced players for? Just pick Pepe or Willock or whatever.
I don't disagree. He's not playing well, but I think that when when you're not playing well, your front line looks terrible. Nobody looks good. Nobody offensively looks good for us at the moment. Nobody looks creative. No one is scoring goals. I'm not.
But well, hold on, don't you think Pepe looked? Didn't we look? We looked better when Pepe came on, though, didn't we? He had a pretty decent chance.
Slightly.
I thought he immediately looked slightly.
But if you've got a player, we're clutching straws there, right? So I think that should Pepe play ahead of Willian? Maybe. I don't think that if Pepe starts the next five games instead of Willian, that's going to be the difference to us winning games. But I think that something needs to change. Maybe that's it.
I'm not saying it's the only thing. I'm just saying, I think it bespeaks a certain bespeaks is a very pompous way of putting it. I don't know where that came from. I think it is evidence of a certain favouritism from a manager when they pick a player who has, I think, been disappointing since his first game. He had quite a decent debut. I don't think he's delivered much at all. And when you're keeping your 72 million younger talent, and you're not picking Willock, of course, ever in the Premier League, who played loads of games in the Premier League, that feels really unfair. That you're kind of, it feels to me like you're playing this famous, experienced old player almost. And I feel it's a hostage to fortune, his signing, because it's one of those things where it's kind of pointless having him as a squad player, isn't it? He was brought in presumably for the experience, and so it would be weird to have him playing in the Europa. I know he did play in the Europa, and he looked really pissed off that he was playing in that game as well. I just think I don't think he's even got the attitude. And I think it's the same with all of these, like, I go back to all of these, like, old players you're buying. What's the point? You know, when we've got really promising youngsters. Josh, I've been banging on about it. Where do you stand on the Willian debate? I'm not saying it's the be all end all, but it's a really important element, isn't it, in making decisions that make sense.
Well, look, Benji mentioned earlier that he felt Willian, you know, caused Chelsea fans to be upset when he was leaving the club. There were definitely a few I spoke to that said one in every four games, brilliant.
Yeah.
The rest of the time,
same.
Take it or leave it, and sort of 6 out of 10 territory. And unfortunately, that might be what we've got. And unfortunately, at the moment, we're about 1 in 7 because it was that one on the opening day away at Fulham that we got the strongest performance, and we haven't had a great deal since. I think it is a problem, Willian, or I forgot to mention the stat that I saw James McNicholas mention in The Athletic, that apparently yesterday was the first time Aubameyang's played 90 minutes for Arsenal and not recorded a shot. So if you've got your best striker on the pitch, the guy you are going to rely on, who will be favourite in the first goal scorer market and everything like that, and we can't get a situation where the guy has a shot against Aston Villa, then something's going wrong with that front three. Now, Aubameyang, as we said, is not going to come out of it. We might just reposition him. So unfortunately, I think for Willian, he is vulnerable here at the moment to a reshuffle, because it doesn't feel like anyone else in that team would have got away with 6, let's call it, performances of a level Willian's has put in and still been, you know, being picked for this team. But equally, on the reverse, the Willock thing is strange. It's strange that he played so much football last year across various different, you know, okay, the cups, but there was certainly league football as well there. So for him not to even make the bench and yet excel so well in Europe at a time where we need creativity and that's what he can offer is a strange one. So I don't know. It feels like it is a good time, maybe, as Benji said, to have a break. It feels horrible as a fan to have 10 days now where you're waiting for the next game and you've...
Josh is frozen.
I was...
Yeah, go on, Benji.
No, I was going to say that... Well, Josh is frozen. He looks great though, doesn't he?
He does. Yeah.
Angry. I was just going to say something, which I think, again, is back to that perspective point. Aston Villa are far better this season than they were last season. They've bought some very good players. They've got some creativity in there that we would like in terms of personnel. And I think the Premiership as a whole is far tighter than it ever has been. You know, you don't turn on games and go, that's an absolute banker. You know, they're going to turn them over. And you can look at it from, I think it's like 13th, 14th up to first. There's about 6 or 7 points difference. So I think that gone are the days where Arsenal play Villa at home and that's a 2-0 home win all day long. And I think that will be the sort of theme of the season where you don't get these easy games. Every game is going to be a grind. And I think our target is to try and put as many sequences of wins together as possible, because you win two or three or four in a row and you're going to jump up that table really quickly.
Yeah, I totally agree with you about Villa. And I think, and you know, they beat Liverpool, they scored seven against Liverpool, fuck's sake.
Yeah.
I mean, they are on their day, when they get ahead of steam going, as they did against us, because it could have been four or five against us, couldn't it, easily?
Yeah.
They are really, you know, they've given those attacking
players. It's much harder now to win games in the Premier League than it ever has been.
Yeah, but also, more than that, I think more than that, there are more and more instances of teams like Villa playing, scoring lots of goals against the big teams, I include us as a, in quotes, big team. So almost yesterday, you know, I've been saying for a while now that it's how weird it is that we're the stable ones in the whole league, you know, because these wild scorelines have happened throughout the season, haven't they? Almost every, you know, Man City, Liverpool losing to multiple goals to teams has happened, except for us. And now this was our version of that. But I think the reason why now this feels like such a calamity, as we've all been saying, is for me, because it exposes that those marginal defeats, you know, against City and Liverpool, like a 1-0 and Leicester, you know, which we could have come away with draws or even on you know, sometimes victories. It puts those into, so now it's like, well, this system that we've got, and I completely understand why he's gone for it, because he's gone for the solidity and the shape as the first thing of most importance defensively after a decade of defensive trauma. You know, that's why all this is happening, isn't it? It all goes back to the defensive ineptitude of the last decade for me. So I completely logically understand why Arteta's doing it, but now I think we have to draw a line under it. You know, now I think this tight, very, very technical, very structured way of playing, he's got to adapt, hasn't he? And before you answer that, we should take a break and we'll talk more about the game and other games to come after this break.
If you want an e-bike that doesn't look like it's made for the shopping precinct, something that's less Mr. Bean and more Steve McQueen, check out the range of bikes from London-based Cooler King. From dope 250-watt city bikes to Harley Bobber-inspired 750-watt beasts that can tear your face off while leaving your smile intact. Cooler Kings are made in limited numbers, yet highly affordable. Check them out now on the web at cooler.bike or find them on Instagram with hashtag CoolerKingBike. Cooler.bike. E-bikes that are cool AF.
And we're back from the break. Josh, you disappeared there, to be honest, out of Zoom, and now you've got a new... slightly more close-up setting. Do you feel with Arteta, like when let's talk about, you know, the Alan Alger the Alan Alger insights. Alan put up a chart yesterday, a graph, no less, if you saw it on Twitter, comparing this thing as he's been comparing the starts, as managerial starts, the stats of Wenger, Rioch, does he even go back to Rioch? I don't know. Emery, Ljungberg, and Arteta. And it's not looking good for Arteta, let's just say that. His Chris Whitty style chart, a graph. But I think his broader point, we have to address his point, don't we? That, I mean, if the last manager had this kind of start on top of the style we play, which everyone was furious about, he would have been even more derided than he was. And so, Emery, I mean. And so that we have to address that, isn't it? Is there a possibility, this is the question, that Arteta isn't quite, I mean, his first job isn't quite as obviously great as we think he is? Josh.
It's a possibility. Of course it is, because the proof will be once he's had a couple of years of opportunity. But I've seen things under Arteta that give me the belief that there is still reason to be optimistic, to not panic from last night. Because you think back to those semi-final and the final that we had in the FA Cup in games that we're expected to lose. And we saw Arsenal performances unlike what we have seen in recent years, and probably that we thought Arsenal weren't capable of, if we're being honest. So Did we see the occasional shock home defeat under Emery or under Wenger? And dare I say it, under Bruce Rioch, the great Bruce Rioch, who definitely was on the Alan Alger graph.
right, thanks.
Of course. But look, you know, can Arteta turn this around and you know, put us in a position where we improve on last year and come top six and even battle for the top four? Yes, I think so, because, you know, you look at that defence, we're so much more encouraged by what we have been able to do on that side of things. And I believe that there's, you know, there's better times ahead going forward. But I understand Alan is going to jump to those conclusions. But then Alan spent a lot of time coming on this podcast telling us that the Premier League Arsene Wenger walked into was not a proper Premier League because only two or three teams could win it every year. So therefore, is it not rational to get his thoughts on that being that Wenger should have got more points because it was an easier Premier League in those days? So maybe it's harder for the managers now to get more points.
It's interesting because, Boyd, could Arteta be a flop? Of course he could. But Josh made a very good point there. He has managed to beat teams that we have been unable to beat for a long time, you know, and multiple times. It hasn't been a one-off, you know, City a couple of times, Liverpool, I think it's three times, including the Carabao Cup this season. You know, he's won big games and he's won a trophy. He's won away at Old Trafford recently. So this guy, I think, is going to be the real deal. He's 38 years old. He's in his first managerial job. He's not even a year into it. And we are, as a club, far more united and far more confident and excited about what's ahead. Will we have more results like yesterday? Yeah, we probably will. Will it be, you know, could we lose to Leeds in a couple of weeks? Yeah, we might. But I think that this guy should be given money and time and confidence to build the future because I think he gets it. And I think that, you know, you can give me Simeone or whoever at the moment. I like Arteta because he understands us. And he's learning, and it will take time. It'll probably take longer time than you know fans will give. But I think that if he stays the course, and you know, it's not. Bear in mind, it actually suits us that he's not so brilliant so soon because Man City and other jobs will be available in the next year or so. And I'd much rather him be learning and developing with us before he leaves to go to one of them. So I'm very much comfortable and confident that he's the right guy.
Yeah, one of the things, Boyd, that frustrated all of us, I think, over the years with the great Arsene Wenger and certainly under Emery would be that when you had those disappointing results, did the manager see what we saw today? Did he see the negativities? And you said it at the very start of this podcast, Boyd, about how impressed you were with his post-match press conference. And you know what? Yes, he's taking it upon himself, certainly in terms of team selection and how disappointing that was and knowing how unacceptable that level of performance is. I think he gave a quote along the lines of that was probably the worst performance that has been, you know, displayed under him. So now you think this guy, he's seeing what we're seeing. He's not pulling the wool over eyes. There was no, you know, we had a wonderful opportunity where Lacazette could have brought us back into the game. And there was no hiding behind that it wasn't good enough. And, you know, that's also, you want to see that. Boy, did you pay for pay-per-view last night? Get another freebie again. Just checking.
Oh, it's a freebie. I get them free from Sky. Yeah. 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 But that's for ending, isn't it? Benji, I get it free because I have a Sky VIP account. Which
so do
is,
I. Could I go?
Why? Because my job. What? Yeah. It's my job, isn't it?
I've got a Sky VIP as well.
I'm on a probably slightly higher level of VIP than you are then. Sorry.
Yeah, Ben. You're not VIP like Boyd Hilton.
This is doing my elite.
He turns left when he goes onto Sky.
This is not doing my already elitist reputation any good, admitting. But I'm being very transparent about it. Yeah, thank God I didn't have to pay for that dross last night. Did you pay for it then, Benji?
Yeah, but I've written in to demand a refund.
Fair enough. But in answer to your point, Josh, all I would say, I think I absolutely agree about that. He said the right things, but I really think the it's so important his team selection against Leeds, isn't it? Because he could, after all this, after all this thing, he could sit there going, "Oh, hold on a minute, though. We are away at Leeds. who have a quite a formidable attack, albeit, you know, I know they lost quite badly at the weekend. They've got a striker on form. He could go, oh, I'm going to play safe, you know, and revert to and pick roughly the same setup. I mean, he could do.
I really hope the party injury right. is a serious one. Because,
oh, yeah, of course.
Because he had our best chance last night. He had our best chance last night, didn't he? Yeah. And he got injured in it. From watching him already, he's a proper player. And it's quite interesting, actually. We haven't mentioned Granit Xhaka because he was a mainstay in every... Yeah. You know, we used to chat about... he's undroppable. You know, Wenger, Emery, Lumba. Nobody dropped this guy. And suddenly, he hasn't been in the last few team sheets. So... clearly, there's a transition here, you know, from the Xhaka sideways protection play to Thomas Partey, who somebody said to me last week, he passes, you know, forward rather than sideways. And it's, you know, it's really, he's going to be a great, great signing for us.
Yeah. He did, there were a couple of times, I mean, he did, you know, that thigh injury might have been, you know, affecting him first half, because he did get dispossessed a couple of times, I think. And Tierney, I mean, everyone had a bad game, but you mentioned how good Tierney is. I agree with you, but Tierney had a couple of moments, didn't he? Even Tierney, where he was robbed of the ball and he fell over, didn't he, early on?
Nobody was good last night.
No,
I think it's fair to
nobody
say.
Was good. Xhaka, had one of his less decent games. Do you think Arsenal fans are railing today about the attitude of the players? Right, which is always a question, isn't it? Was it just the wrong team for that game? And were we just overrun by a very, very effective Villa side with some really skillful players on their best form? That front four, where they were brilliant. Or was there was an application issue as well? Was there a lack of hard work? I think there was a bit of both, wasn't there? I think if you compare it to how we were against United.
Just before Josh comes in, I was going to say 100% that there was, and Arteta pointed out again in his press conference, the lack of second balls and commitment in duels, he said. I definitely noticed that. You saw from the very first minute at Old Trafford, we went crunching into some challenges. And I accept that you can't do that for 38 games a season in terms of high press, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But it wasn't the same commitment level last night. It was a bit of a swagger that we beat United last week. We're going to turn up tonight. And there was frustration. I saw Lacazette a number of times, you know, throwing his arms around. Aubameyang, who I've never seen moan at other players, I noticed last night. So I think it was a built-up frustration that they... which actually, again, I'm quite pleased about. We're not as good as we think we are. Much better to realise that after 8 games in and show that commitment when you need to than after 28 games.
Yeah, it's true. Without wanting to go on about Willian again, one other thing I wanted to say about, I thought the fact his when he lost the ball, I thought it was really noticeable that he just kind of accepted it. And again, to compare with Pepe again, I know Pepe does get dispossessed quite a lot, but I know almost every time he does, he tries his damnedest to get back and do something about it. And I'm not sure if Willian did. I'm not sure if Willian did, really.
Well, I think the first goal we conceded ultimately came from Willian being dispossessed. And then eventually, obviously, it gets worked around for about 30 seconds. I mean, it's a great goal from Aston Villa's point of view, but, you know, the opportunities for Arsenal to get a foot in, I think it was it Cash who put the ball across and ultimately the own goal from Saka. You know, someone to have that much space in our box is incredibly disappointing. You know, for the goal where Barkley's smashed it across a goal, it's a brilliant pass. But if you freeze what's going on there, you've got five, I think even six Arsenal players in the penalty area and only really Ollie Watkins in the middle. And yet, you know, he's the one that finds himself on the end of it. There were just moments yesterday where we were poor. And even the Ollie Watkins finish that went in through Leno's legs, which is always disappointing. You know, Gabriel and Holding just weren't, you know, in unison at all there. Gabriel was, you know, a good foot or two deeper and it just didn't look quite right. So there were just individual errors. Sort of.
Yeah, I think we missed Luiz. I think we did miss Luiz, didn't we, in defence? Yeah. I mean...
Well, I think for what he brings, I think we all know what we're getting with David Luiz now. And whether we like it or not, I think unfortunately or fortunately, he deserves to start. We're going to get the odd error. We're going to get what happened at Man City away last year. But we're also going to, you know, have the experience there and have the ability to play a big ball going forward. And, you know, we've got worse people that seem to be given free kick opportunities or chances to get involved than him. So... Yeah, I think there'll be changes. I'm trying not to get to it. It was very disappointing last night. I feel if we'd done a podcast straight away, it would have been sort of more emotional, more, you know, like when you see sometimes the Arsenal fan TV guys doing their immediate, like, scores out of 10. It can feel horribly...
I was so gutted, yeah. I was so gutted I couldn't watch Match of the Day. And it's the first time I can think of in a long time that a performance has been so disappointing that I felt I couldn't watch the highlights and see. Because I like to see what they say. You know, you get a different point of view from Match of the Day 2, wherever it is, to when you watch it live. But I didn't watch it. Did anyone watch it? Did they have any special insights?
No way.
No
way. <You're> not... But it was what I looked at. I remember looking at a fixture list and seeing, I think it was City, Leicester, Man United, and thinking if we take 4 points out of those, that wouldn't be bad. We got 3. And now I look ahead, I think that there's a run of fixtures where because we didn't get 4 points out of 9 and because we didn't beat Villa, you know, it's that train effect that they get bigger and bigger. And actually, if you don't win the next one, then the pressure increases for the next one. So I think, I think we've got a run now. I'm just looking at it. I think we've got Leeds and then we've got Wolves at home, don't we?
Wolves at home, Spurs
away.
And then we've
got Spurs away. So you want to go into the Spurs game having picked up 6 points out of the next 2, because I know people say Leeds are good and it's hard to go away. Yes, but if actually we want to finish top 4, the fact that you haven't now won your home game against Leicester and Villa means that what was a point and probably a decent point, now you want to get 3 and 3 more at home to Wolves to pick up what you've missed. So it's the next phase and the next chunk are going to be big.
Yeah, 100%. Let me finish. We've nearly been going for nearly an hour. How about this? How about we pick our since the forward line is the problem? Well, you know, we haven't been scoring. We haven't been creating chances. Blah blah blah. What would you think about? Let's think about what would your favoured front line be? I mean, and also, and what formation? Do you know what I mean? So I'll start. I'm going to go for. I think he should try. I mean, I wouldn't be 100% against. Villa had a 4-2-3-1 yesterday, roughly, with Trezeguet, Barkley, Grealish and Watkins in the middle up front. I think we could have Willock, Pepe, you know, maybe Saka behind Aubameyang, and I would be happy with that. Or we could have a 4-3-3 and just have Aubameyang, Saka and Pepe. What about you, Benji?
I like
dropping Lacazette, clearly.
I'm surprised at that one. You sounded like you really liked him earlier.
I know. It's reluctant.
I think I like 5 at the back because I think if you don't concede, you've always got a chance to win the game. So I think the wing backs, I'd have Bellerin and if you're going to put Luiz in there, Bellerin and Tierney with Holding, Luiz and Gabriel at the back. And then, so then you've got Partey, for me, he has to start in the middle. I think I really like Saka. Saka, Partey, Saka, Pepe, and then Willock and Aubameyang for the next game. But that's because something has to change, and I'd have whether it's a 5-3-2 or 5-3-1-1, whatever it may be. I think we need 5 at the back.
Yeah, yeah. No, I see what you mean. Yeah, Josh.
Well, just in terms of the front three, I think he will stick with a 3, but I think it will change in entirety in terms of sort of not only sort of personnel on 2 of them, but in terms of Aubameyang having to go centre, and then I'm with you, Saka, and Pepe. I mean, Pepe's not done enough wrong, or Willian's not done enough right, where that isn't a valid change now going into
Martinelli walks into this team, doesn't he?
It's a classic example. He does. I agree with you of a player being out and injured who's become like the greatest player in the world. You know, because we can't pick him.
I watched him a handful of times. I remember him at Stamford Bridge, obviously, as the standout one. But he adds something different. And I know Arteta wasn't playing him, but the kid's different. And at the moment, we're way too predictable. There's nothing different about us.
Well, what Martinelli would be is an exciting option, at least off the bench, because, yeah, that is the problem yesterday, wasn't it? There just wasn't a belief that anyone coming on is probably going to change the game the way, you know, Pepe is probably not in brilliant form in the league and, you know, and Nketiah. Martinelli would be a very exciting option to have to come off the bench to change games. I can't imagine he walks back into the team, certainly until he's, you know, had a good amount of football underneath him. And I'm not sure. I'm not sure even if Duffery does, whether he'll necessarily be a confirmed starter. But, yeah, I mean, he's the only one. Usually, if, you know, years go by at Arsenal, you're thinking, well, when this one comes back, that one comes
like
back.
Like a new signing. Diaby.
It's only him, though. Yeah. Yeah, but it's only Martinelli now. It is
What Arteta's got, actually, at the beginning, he had this trick up his sleeve, which nobody knows what I'm going to do. So Aubameyang on the left was novel. And I think now, I always think about it from the other team's perspective, how do you play against Arsenal? Well, it's quite easy to figure out now because you know what we're going to do. Yeah. So that's his real challenge, isn't it?
Apart from when he played Willian in the middle up front against, who was it?
Yeah, it was just bizarre. But now his issue is, how do I become unpredictable, or how do I make, you know, Wenger's philosophy was, we're going to be so bloody good that even if we're predictable, you can't stop us. Well, we don't have the personnel for that. So how now do you become unpredictable or really fluid and cohesive that you beat a team? But I think we're all violently agreeing, actually, with one another.
Here we are, yeah. I hope that hasn't made for too disappointing a podcast for listeners that we're all agreeing. Matt, we're not agreeing entirely. You defended Willian quite well, yeah. Anyway. We should stop now, because I think we've talked ourselves. We've convinced ourselves that Martinelli is the answer to everything. I certainly have. Does anyone know when he's due back, by the way? Is it end of the year, presumably? Or
I think so.
Early next year?
I think they're due to start full training by the new year. So we should see him in April.
Excellent. Martinelli will save us all. That's the title of the podcast. Thank you very much, Benji. It's been great.
Lovely to see you both.
Yeah.
Keep well.
I hope you come back soon. And Josh, as ever. Now we've got a little break. I guess we'll be back. Oh, we should predict the Leeds game. Are we going to be on before then? Probably. God, what am I thinking of?
It's it now.
Well, I think we probably should, shouldn't we?
Yes, absolutely.
Right, Benji, we haven't finished yet. What's the score going to be in the fucking Leeds game on Saturday, the 22nd of November? 1-1. Okay. Nice. Josh?
2-2.
Oh, I was going to say that. I'm going to say 3-3 then. there we go. It's a bombshell, thrilling end to the podcast when we remember to do predictions. Thank you again to Benji and to Josh. And that's it. We'll see you after the Leeds game. Cheers. Bye.
Take care. Bye.
Wasn't that a great podcast? Now, if you've got 90 seconds spare in your day, come and listen to ours. It's called What Has He Said Now? And is available wherever you got this podcast.
You're going to lose a number of people to the flu.
This is a Playback Media production. To listen to all our football podcasts, visit playbackmedia.co.uk.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.